sorry I missed the SEP call, but I'm keen. So we're going to meet next week. You will explain to me then. But the Eric Boscati team, they will note what Lita has said. Okay. Now over then to those who want to ask questions. Thank you very much, Lita, for doing what you do. You see, it makes it simpler. You start off by saying, look, you guys said this last year. You know, this is my response. It saves time. It's also politically wise, because then the committee is put on a defense. Good tactic. Mr. Chris Wong, I just want to remind you, you're a member of this committee, even you're sitting in the last row. We don't like you sitting there in the last row without being part of it. Sorry? Oh, dear Maureen.
Last year the committee raised issues about safeguarding our intellectual property rights in strategic partnerships with external people. There was a process that was implemented after those questions arose. How far is the process and has been resolved? Thanks, I'll pop in.
Yes, Chair. The only thing I know about trees is how to cut trees. I don't know about different blocks and stuff. So, no question on that call, but PPMR, I see that the Westinghouse Consortium has also wine contracts from U.S. Department. Taking that view, from summer school last year, we were told that the PPMR, autumn school last year. Winter school, okay, well, anyway. So, we were told that these foreign companies are strategic partnerships. So, now I sort of lost what I was going to. Oh, yes. So now I want to find out if the agreement with the Chinese partner, has it brought in any value to him? Just in essence, before I find out what has the Chinese partnership or the agreement has brought in terms of value, or is it going to be short term or long term, or if any, up until this thing?
I'm not sure. I think some of the questions that I had, especially on stock policy, answered, covered. Other than to say, of course, most of our concerns, as the minister said, are going to be contained in the agreement that they are going to have. So, but it means we'll have to have a follow-up and get a regular report how is it going to appear there? Yeah, so that our fears are being allayed. Yes, because even though there is a regulator, we don't know how far is he working in terms of addressing the concerns the communities may have, especially the communities around the forest, those who are supposed to benefit. hour because we've got different stories that are coming there. So I think that those concerns will have to be addressed at the end of the day.
This issue arose as well about MPs dealing with constituents whose unhappiness has been expressed via this committee. For example, Nkosi Nonkonyana also raised, I think, one of the Eastern Cape projects that, you know, the people there, because he's a traditional leader in the area or he knows the people there, also reached out to him to complain about the after effects. The notion was that you hand over maybe 2% or whatever to empowerment actors in the community, and then you abandon them, and they're unable to manage. It's the same sort of thing in land reform. We can constantly say to the ANC and the government leadership that, you know what, don't just transfer the land, also provide the skills to manage the land and so on. It's a similar sort of thing. If government seems like it falls short regularly, you need some abstract deadlines so you can report to parliament, whoever, but the follow-through, the sustainability is not... I also think that members should feed into Rita's work, their constituency experiences, because it brings a different vantage point. Having said that, are there any more questions before we tie up? Yes, Chris, again?
Sorry, I just forgot the second question.
Yeah, sure.
Previously. How much percentage of the budget it's used to up the media profile of PPMR in terms of educating the younger generation, especially the youth, or the general public.
Okay, can I ask a few questions? We're dealing with manufacturing enterprises, right? You've got certain deadlines, right? On page 643 of the ENE, you say new SAFCO role and mandate April 2007. Now, for the minister's report on that, right? You expect to sign a lease agreement for KFL in September 2007, as soon as that. That's what your ENE says. Then the PBMR shareholders agreement, April 2007, as has happened. PBMR listed as a public entity, April 2007, as that happened. Look at all those deadlines there. They don't seem to me to be very realistic. The pilot fuel plan, you say, will start in 2007. Are you on course? Now, in defense sector, you talk of joint venture partnerships, a number of local and international partnerships concluded November 2007. Now, this may be sensitive information, we appreciate. But if you can, how many local and international partnerships are you anticipating? So that's in respect of your outputs and objectives that you set outside. Now, look at your budget for the program. Excuse me. You've explained various things, transfers and subsidies and the discrepancies. But there was a question I had that seems to have escaped me now. And if I can't find it in the next minute, let's drop it. Where's the question? Oh, yes. This is the question I wanted to ask. Oh, look, I'll forego it because I'm not very clear what my question is. Okay, leave it, Mr. Moore. Thank you.
Not a question as such, but it's something Lita said that I missed out on Kuha. So if he could repeat what he said about Kuha. Yeah.
For the deadline. Your question around the deadlines, I think we think that they are realistic. They've not been couched in the air. One, I mean, if you take the lease agreement with Water Affairs and Subcon, it's an ongoing negotiation that won't be starting now. It's the stalemate issue that has been there, you know, and we thought that we could play a role as a department to facilitate that. So we'll not be starting it in this financial year. It's been there, there's been disagreement. Yeah, we were hoping to really just conclude it because it has implications for the transaction, you know. That's what I wanted to point out. On the pilot fuel plant, I think you probably have a point there around the deadline. But we're drawing it directly from the PIM, which is the project information document of PBMR, which outlines key milestones. And the idea of us tying ourselves to the deadline is that
there have been shifts in the deadlines as to when the pilot fuel ban is going to be implemented. And some of the shifts are not even cannot be accounted for by the entity. I mean, if you don't get the license, and if you're not clear, the EIAs and other things and so on. But the concern that has been emerging is that deadlines within the implementation of the project have been shifted, and we said that we need a structure of that so that we can kind of work backwards. On the joint venture partnerships, I think the first one in the case of Jinel is the SAP one. I think that's done. And then you've got the Zeist one, which I think is almost concluded. There's another one that is coming, which we are kind of working on a partner. But essentially, we're looking at the biggest elements of Jinel and basically saying that in those, let's try and get partnerships. And in those areas that are viewed as strategic by the Department of Defense, there's no need for partnerships. So those ones continue to be funded by the CISCA through DOT. That's the point I'm trying to put forward. On the question that Minister is raising on... The nuclear sector strategy? Yeah, okay. Let me go to the... Okay, we probably have to re-clarify the issue of listing and the shareholders' agreement. It's an issue that we've kept in abeyance deliberately, and I think that we will have to have a relook, because when we submitted the E&E, some of the discussions around the restructuring of ESCOM hasn't taken place. So I think, there, Chair, you're right, we have to relook at those deadlines, because we are not going to be listing the PBMR as a public entity unless I'm wrong, Chair. In the light of the ESCOM discussions.
Sandra, you would probably know some of the issues on the agreement. But on the PBMR, I just wanted to add what Lita is talking about. You would recall that the minister did mention, and the DG, that the issue of PBMR has been under discussion within the context of restructuring ESCOM, but also within the context of the nuclear strategy that we're expecting from DME. DME has moved on that. We have a draft already. It's been circulated now in other government departments for discussion. So within that context, we should be in a position to look at the future of PBMR within the nuclear program of ESCOM. And we are actually envisaging a situation where PBMR is likely to be part of ESCOM instead of being a separate listed entity. September, October. This year. Yeah, before the... But the issue of PBMR and ESCOM actually took place in February or so, when really the board of ESCOM and PBMR were discussing this issue. So then we really didn't have much at that time. Yeah.
Just to add on the point that you're saying, even when you look at the checks for...
I wanted to just raise a question, Chair, of, let's say, we understand that there's going to be a private sector capital invested in PBMR, if I'm not mistaken. And at what percentage, because I wanted to check ESCOM, whether ESCOM is going to have got investment in the PBMR, but yeah, I'm told that is going to be taken in the long term by ESCOM. It means ESCOM is going to be a major investor in the PBMR. But are we also envisaging, by what percentage that we are thinking of to distribute to the private sector?
Chair, if you recall, PBMR, you have key investors already in PBMR, which is Eskom, IDC, Westinghouse, and government. Those are the current shareholders in PBMR. And they have been contributing their part in funding the research around design, around safety, the issues that they are working on for the fuel plant and the demonstration power plant. Now, what has happened is they were supposed, that's why you see in the E&E, they were supposed to have finalized shareholders agreement, but that could not take place because there were issues arising out of what government wants to do with PBMR and Eskom. And this has taken some time. Hence, even now, the shareholders agreement has not been signed. In fact, what happened is they ended up wanting to have a cooperative agreement. But still, they could not put more money into PBMR because government was still finalizing the future of PBMR. So in short, we are envisaging a situation where PBMR will be a subsidiary or part of Eskom directly. And then over time, there may be areas where you want to bring in private funding in specific areas. But it will be still the IP, the intellectual property will be with Eskom, part of government. That's the idea.
On just on the Jim can also handle the Chinese Westinghouse issue relevant to that. Just on the intellectual property issue that you raised, after our discussions last year, we went back to DNEL to basically establish that in those areas, you raised the question. Yeah, it was you. Okay. We went back to DNEL to basically understand what normally happens when they get into some of the joint ventures. And the response we have got is that in the case of SAP, they have not lost intellectual property. But also, I think also in the case of ZEISS, they also haven't lost intellectual property. But they do acknowledge that in the coming joint ventures, because they have not registered IPs appropriately, they might lose them. You know, so I just wanted just to feed you onto that issue. But we did take the concerns up front. I think James will cover this issue about what...
That Martin Stevens, former member of this committee, did a lot of work. We sent the report through. I don't know where it's lying, but we need to follow that up. Can you remind me, Eric and Desmond, we need to follow those issues up? Because the report is very good, actually. And Bonani, we should actually, well, we've distributed the report through the committee, so you should have a copy in your files there, Chris Pisani's files. But I will forward there. Such as they are, but I will give you, or we have to get your filing system started again. I must remind you about that next week. All right, we will just check. We want a response from Danielle and from the department on what Martin has said, because he did quite a lot of work. He went and met Danielle, and he's an expert in this area, as I think Josh knows. Okay, thank you.
The last question that I think Rob raised, the question about, it's not a question, it's a comment on how you would deal with communities and so on and so on. It would not be appropriate for me to respond to it in a definitive way on the question, but what we have suggested is that in us formulating the transaction guidelines, which we will be giving to the board of SAFCON, we take into account all of the concerns that have been raised by communities in the past transaction, including the issue of follow-up as one of the issues. You know, if you tie it there within the guidelines, so that you tie the board. So So as they go into the transaction, they raise all of those issues.
So just to very, very quickly on PBMR, just to there was a mention of Chinese. I'm not sure what you're referring to, because as I know, it was Westinghouse essentially, and maybe Arriva as well, the French one that were interested in PBMR. But currently, it's Westinghouse and Toshiba. Maybe that's what you're referring to.
That's fine. I was just wondering because. And Westinghouse has helped PBM to procure a contract in the States.
Oh, yes.
And I was just wondering what has the Chinese brought up to the table, since we also had an agreement and MOU with them. Because I think the Chinese had a contract for 30 reactors, and I don't think the South African government managed to get them, any of them. So I was wondering why, you know, how come Westinghouse didn't help or couldn't manage to get this.
Okay,
yeah, thanks.
Before Sandra, I think earlier there was a mention on the discussions around Treasury and other departments raising concerns about PBMR, you know, whether we should continue to fund PBMR or not, because we have now spent collectively with other investors up to 4 billion rand on PBMR. And if you recall, originally, this was part of a project in Eskom to see how we get more energy through the PBMR. But over time, as PBMR was evolving, you know, it ended up showing other opportunities around process heat and other things. And the cost, as we look at the corporate plan, the costs are also increasing. Hence, the view that says we need to step back and look at how we're going to fund PBMR. Now, the money that you see there allocated for PBMR that was spent this month, I mean last month, on the 25th, that was a crisis emergency funding on PBMR. Because the issue is we really need the four ministers, EPE, GME, Science and Technology, and Treasury, to sit down and talk about the future of PBMR and advise Cabinet as to what are the next steps, how are we going to monitor PBMR. So a decision has to be taken. Are we proceeding or we are not proceeding with PBMR? That's the idea.
I can just assist in answering Chris's question on the Chinese tender. I believe the rationale is that the Chinese tender was for generations of technology, which is still current technology, whereas the PBMR technology is forward-looking generation 4 technology. And the component of the tender that they're participating in the U.S., is towards new technology. So it's technology appropriate, and it's a certain dimension of the PBMR makeup that they're participating in. Yes, it's just that a Chinese tender with different technology.
Let's move on. But your last statement leaves like a uncertainty hanging in the air. I mean, I thought government's committed to PBMR, and many of us have reservations about costs and what will be the outcome. But over the last 18 months, I think because of the public discussion on nuclear energy and so on, we've retreated a bit. We've also retreated because we don't have the technical capacity to offer you a cogent critique. And we'll have to live by it. We'll have to answer to our children if something goes wrong, as we said before, and our grandchildren. But for now, what is it? I don't want a long discussion, but I mean, you're leaving it hanging in the air as if government's still thinking through whether it's worth it, given the cost. The first public statement to that effect. Okay, that's what you're saying, and that's the official position. Okay, let's move on. We are going to discuss PBMR. We're going on now. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you so much. Oh, sorry, what's that? No, I said that... By the way, can I just ask the researchers to help me also? Because, you know, it's tiresome, cheery.
you've got to say, look, a question has not been answered. That's your role as well. So, Eric and Desmarine, please, man.
Okay, I said that we, Andrew Shaw, when he makes the presentation, he'll deal with it. I can deal with it briefly, but allow him to go through the process. What we've done is that we had developed a paper on private sector participation in Gugha. And why Gugha? Because in the country, there are basically three aspects of port, management of port. The land itself, the operations within the port, and so on and so on. Now, our view is land, and then the operation. I mean, the other aspect relevant to the port is how the links to the port, i.e. the rail that goes at the surface, which is not a major aspect if you look at the issues we're dealing with. Now, the decision we had taken, which we reported to the portfolio committee last year, was that we were targeting Gugha because there are no labor issues if you were to look at private sector participation, the greenfield part. So you can't take the urban part, because if you want to take private sector to participate, especially in operations, you might have to deal with the labor agreements that are there at the moment. It might actually take a long time. And it's a new area that was not tested, that other countries have tested. So we thought the safer way is to go for Gugha, you know, in this case, but incrementally introduce it, especially in operations, not in ownership of the infrastructure. It makes it dangerous to move towards operation of the infrastructure. And as we're doing that, we submitted the paper. However, Transnet was evolving a long, medium to long-term rail and port master plan. And we therefore said we cannot view private sector participation without any sense about what is the outlook of ports, which port specializes in what in the country over time. And therefore, you can't see private sector participation, you know, as the solution to the need to deal with port capacity and for what purpose. Therefore, we said we'll allow the board of Transnet to finalize the ports and rail master plan and determine in which ports would private sector participation become relevant. I just wanted to just clarify it. But otherwise, I said earlier on that Andrew would deal with the issue.
Just to say, the essay has been covered quite exhaustively, Andrew. And given that we've got it on the agenda for next week, will you be there? All right, but we will be discussing it there. Others will be there who can cover us. And we've still got an outstanding question about Desmarine and Greg. We'll come back to that at the end, okay? Okay, let's move on, Andrew. Let's say you can skip through it very fast, but focus a bit on Transnet. Again, let me alert you to this. On the whole, this committee is reasonably satisfied with Transnet's progress. And we get a very exhaustive response from them when we raise issues. So, you know, that too does have to be dealt with in great detail. It's something very new. Okay. Oh, it's a bit rude to cut it short. Oh, that's something. Oh, sorry, no. Yes, okay.
Well, first of all, thank you, Chair. As it's my maiden speech, I'm going to speak short as opposed to long. And I'll take note of what you said. Okay, I'll try and say the right thing. Under Transport Enterprises, there's two sub-programs. There's the first that deals with Transnet, and the second one, which we really call the Aviation Program, that deals with SAA predominantly, but also the SAA Express process. So that's really where we sit within the structure of the department. I will go through this slide relatively quickly, but I'll try and give you some insights into some of the detail that is behind this. This is really a summary of the sub-program of Transnet. There are some very basic things that we are in the process of doing, such as the transfer of socialism mail to SLCC and DOT, which is a process that Transnet's very keen to conclude. So it's really just a matter of going through the various loops and so on to make sure that that process takes place. Monitor and review Transnet's financing and funding plans is a process that we do in respect of quarterly reviews, but it's also something that is linked to the monitoring of the rollout of CapEx within Transnet. There has been some delay in the rollout of CapEx in the Transnet group. Some of that delay has got to do with procurement of assets which on the global market are in scarce supply, such as harbour cranes and locomotives and that kind of thing. measure the impact of the SOE Transnet in this case on the economy, is a program that we have initiated in this year to focus on trying to identify and measure and quantify the impact that a group, a large corporation such as Transnet has on the economy. It's also to try and pick up some of the developmental issues that were spoken about this morning. So the focus of that program is to also is to understand the macroeconomic impact that Transnet has, but also the localized impact that Transnet may create in certain locations, but also with respect to the procurement of assets with a predominantly local component. And then the last issue in the output slide is the continuous refinement of the Port and Rail Master Plan. We are in the process, and it will continue through this year, of preparing a cabinet memo on the Port and Rail Master Plan. Transnet have provided us quite a significant amount of detail on their proposals for Port and Rail. That, together with their corporate plan, which we regard as a good document, although we have a critique which points to some shortcomings, focuses very much on understanding how this part of transport fits together with the rest of the transport sector and where their focus of investment is, etc. Underlying that is two things, really. One of them is the beginnings of to bring a private operator or begin to bring a private player into the port of Kuka through a kind of PSP process. And Lita has already given you quite a lot of detail in respect of how we intend to do that and what are the strategic objectives for that. This is something that was carried over from the previous financial year when I was not at the department, but has been delayed a little by Transnet, but also by the development of the port infrastructure at Kuka. The second area is enhanced involvement of multiple operators in the rail environment. And the objective here is to begin with the branch lines, many of which are underutilized or unutilized at this stage. Even though they're held within Spoonet, these branch lines represent an opportunity for local economic development around freight, but more and more local economic development around tourism, where particularly in KZN, there's some real opportunities to reinvigorate some of these branch lines and to attract tourism into areas that are predominantly not regarded as tourist locations at present. We also, as part of this, initiating a project which is entitled Customer Experience of Rail and Port, and the operational delivery of rail and port. And our focus here is to try and pick up from a customer's perspective what are some of the challenges about Transnet's delivery in the rail and port environment. We hear a lot sort of secondhand, but we don't actually experience it firsthand. So we would like to a small program to try and understand some of those things better. Maybe the last thing that I should mention is the competitive supply development program, which we are working with Transnet on. If I can move to the next slide. Sorry, I'm going up. Let's go down to aviation. Here, there has been some discussion, and the Minister has given quite substantial insights into the process around SAA. It's very clear that this is a high priority activity, particularly around the turnaround strategy for SAA and the immediate recapitalization. We have to work very closely, particularly with National Treasury, but also with other government departments such as DEET, which handles has a strong interest in tourism, and Department of Transport, which sets the policy for this environment. The focus of National Treasury's involvement is to get their buy-in in respect of recapitalization of the turnaround strategy. The turnaround strategy, from our perspective, is progressing well, and so we are in the process of critiquing in some detail the Seabury turnaround approach that that has been provided through SAA. There is a strong feeling that the turnaround strategy focuses on a real two-year horizon. This is really about taking this company, which is in dire straits, and trying to refocus the business in the immediate term. A focus of what we are undertaking in the department is to begin to understand what are the opportunities for a long-term aviation strategy and the involvement of the state in that. And so we're in the process of creating a sustainable integrated aviation strategy for South Africa. This is a process that may span more than one financial year. But this strategy really is focused on understanding the major cost drivers in this industry, what is happening in the global aviation industry, some of the issues that the minister mentioned. This industry is regarded as a very high-risk industry all around the world. It's also a very dynamic industry that's changing very rapidly, and it's very important to understand and get some insight into this industry if you're going to play a role as the state in actually operating or owning an airline in this industry. We're also looking at domestic strategic focus of routes, and then we regard the development of some scenarios around an African air map as a really important component to understanding what role both SA Express and SAA can play within the African environment. Obviously, we will look at various options, alliances, JVs, etc., as global practice for enhancing the strategic position of various airlines in doing that. Legislation in respect of the listing of SAA to DPE, my understanding is that this process is really largely complete and it awaits enactment, awaits presidential enactment of the bill. The process around SA Express is much further behind. As the Minister said this morning, SA Express will report to us as a separate SOE, but it requires supporting legislation to actually create that reporting link. And so we are initiating that process, obviously, together with Sandra, if she's still there, I'm not sure, who handles the legislative side, but we will handle the aviation or the industry side of that focus. And then lastly, we are working with SA Express around an immediate Africa strategy. SA Express's balance sheet is much stronger than SAA's. It's regarded as very competitive on certain routes. It has some competitive advantage around being able to fly uniquely to some routes, an issue that was mentioned previously this morning. And the focus here is how do we enhance its involvement in Africa, and so we're working quite closely with them on that. And that will ultimately lead to a corporate plan which would go through the same processes of review as the SAA corporate plan. And just lastly on the budget items, the budget looks like it's increased quite significantly. Not having been here in the previous financial year, I don't know the full history of this budget, but it's clear that it has been quite difficult to try and extract those elements of the budget from the previous financial year and put them into this new program of transport. So it may not be a completely accurate description to say that the budget has doubled from 06-07 to 07-08. However, in the 07-08 year, we do have 10 million available, of which goods and services make about 4.4, which would largely be used for consulting services, predominantly around the Africa Aviation Strategy, but also some consulting support for some of the initiatives in respect of Transnet. And that is largely it. Compensation of employees in the budget is 5.6, which is it looks like a substantial increase on the previous budget, although some of those are for posts that are currently vacant at this stage. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, we listened to the briefing, but I think at some later stage we must also get the financial analysis, you know, the cost-benefit analysis of all these. We need to do this, we need to do that, we want to do this, and we look into this and that. What are the financial implications and what's the benefits after a year or, you know, when they come to address us after the following annual report to say what it costs and what was the benefit of all this? It's really nice to hear of all these smart things and the good things, but what happened then eventually a year later? Thank you.
So just to clarify, this is, you know, when we were dealing with SAA and the transfer of SAA from France, we knew what we were speaking of because SAA has been to us a couple of times. But we really know nothing about SAA Express besides seeing the planes at the airport and some of us driving on them. I don't know. It would be important later for us to get a bit more, not now, but to get some feel of what SAA Express is all about in terms of what we're going to do later with legislation.
the article was going for South African Express. That's fine. That's a concrete explanation. The second thing is, I'm not sure whether it's a fair question, John Andrew. Maybe you can help from touching. On page 644 of the EME, under economic characteristics, you got current payments shooting up from 4.6 million to 10.1 million. What is that amount? Then travel and subsistence jumped up from 46 million to 508. Consultants, okay, that's understandable, that Andrew's explained. So I don't know who's going to respond to page 644 of the EME. Then just look at your measurable objectives. Here you've got transport sector, private sector participation in ports, and really got June 2007, Andrew. That deadline is feasible. And then aviation, you're going to try and sign a shareholders agreement in June this year. I'm impressed. Well, I'm sure we're all impressed, but is that a realistic deadline? Yeah. Okay. Anything else anyone in space? The last round, because we're going to end now. Okay, that's it. Yep. Thanks, Jay. Let me
respond first on the cost benefit. The cost benefit of a lot of these programs is that they're ongoing. A lot of the programs around Transnet, for example, are ongoing government programs where we need to slot in with the policy of the Department of Transport, which has a freight logistics strategy and so on. And so we have to be part of the process of aligning the SOE to fit with that. A lot of the budget items in respect to Transnet are actually relatively small. The one item of budget which I mentioned, which is larger this year than in previous years, is this long-term aviation strategy. And I think the cost-benefit for that is very clear. The case for turning SAA around, I think the Minister has made this morning, the cost of turning SAA around is quite substantial. Already that needed to be recapitalized in the order of $1.3 billion. If we don't have, as government, some clear idea of where the sector is going and what is the role of SAA or an SAE within the sector, then clearly we're not going to be providing the right kind of insight for this airline. And sure, SAA can come up with a turnaround strategy, and that's what they're doing. But that turnaround strategy has a very short frame of focus. The focus is actually trying to rectify that airline so that it can play a commercial role within a two-year period. The focus of this strategy is to take a much longer-term perspective and actually begin to think about positioning these airlines, SA Express and SAA. So I think the cost-benefit is very clear. If you look at the potential cost of that, which is, let's say, about $3 million, the recapitalization costs of SAA are substantially greater than that. That's a relatively small budgetary allocation. And you really do need to bring in global experts and consultants that can actually give you a clear sense of what's happening in the global environment. This is not something which you can really second guess. So that's really the logic of giving you some insight into that sort of area of consultant expenditure. In respect of SA Express, I concur with what you're saying, and I think the history of SA Express is that they've kind of been embedded in SAA for such a long period of time that they've really been forgotten about. And because of all the challenges around SAA, we don't really see the opportunities in SA Express. But in my interactions in the short time of the department, I've been really impressed about what the management of that company seems capable of and their understanding of the local market to smaller towns and to the African market. Their focus is very much to fly narrow-body aircraft, and this is what differentiates them from SAA. So they look for the kind of low-volume routes, either in sub-Saharan Africa or in Africa, and their focus is to try and enhance that market, and they've got some really strong proposals for how they do that. Their success in the past has been about incrementally building up routes. So I mentioned the route Lubumbashi and DRC, and essentially there was no traffic to Lubumbashi 3 or 4 years ago, and SA Express created a scheduled service to Lubumbashi and then built up that demand over a period of time to the extent where it's now a sustainable part of their route network. And so there's opportunities for them to do that in the local and African markets, and those opportunities I think would probably interest the subcommittee, so perhaps there should be a scope to ask them to give some insight to some of their thinking. The budget issues I can't respond to certainly in terms of the NEU. What I can say is that I myself, not having the history, I'm quite surprised about the budget difference between 06 and 07 and 07 and 08, because I don't see any substantial more staff or a great deal more consulting services that we are now doing that weren't done in the department previously. So it could be that this is a slight undercount in 06, 07, and I think Sandy did indicate that that may be possible because it's so difficult when you're restructuring the department to allocate every rand of budget to its appropriate area.
Just to add on to what Rashid is saying, there was a lot of cross-cutting functions in the units last year, and in order to actually pinpoint the expenditure to the last cent, we aggregated as far as we could, and going forward, the unit gave us the figures for the next 3 years. We can give you more details than, you know, what is here. I don't have that kind of insight. We don't have that here.
Not on the budget, the budget question, but the question was asked about whether we were being a little ambitious in terms of the dates. And the dates are really are much clearer on the Transnet slide than on the aviation slide. I think we've sometimes one has to be ambitious about these dates just to create the pressure and the environment where we need to deliver. And some of these processes are underway. For example, bringing in a private sector operator as a management contractor or a JV into the Port of Cooker has been something that's been on the table for some time. So we feel that this is a process that we can begin to move through relatively quickly. Things like the corporate plan, we've actually already done our initial assessment of the corporate plan, and so we are in the process of putting together the cabinet memo around that. Other things on here, I think, are largely within the scope of possibility. Unfortunately, sometimes these processes are slightly out of your hands in that you do have to work with other ministries and with Transnet.
Can I add, I thought the question that he asked was also general, not only to transport, about us continuing to talk about programs that we have without reflecting the cost benefit of that. I think that can be done. But if the question would want to understand the rationale behind, I'll just use one example. Just the defense industry. You've had a situation in South Africa where the Army or DOD hasn't issued a defense review over a 5-year period. And in other countries, like particularly in the US, which has a high defense budget, every 3 years, they bring local industry into a room once in a while and say, of our spend, these are the capabilities that we'll need over the next 10 years, number one. And of these capabilities, which ones are we going to source locally? Now, in our own case, the Army hasn't done that, or DOD per se. Now, it therefore makes it difficult for a company, an SOE like Dinel, to understand whether they can exit certain areas. For example, one of the areas was optronics, the weren't sure. But one of them was the missiles area, the huge capability around missiles. And we've discovered recently that the Army isn't really interested in building capability in missiles. Rather, on particular aspects of the missiles that are relevant to communication, education and so on and testing of missiles rather than, you know, building KVs. So what I'm trying to point out is that now when you go through a sector study, it enables you to link up, you know, the requirements of DOD and what industry requires and what are the gaps, and you try to plug in the gaps and so on. Now, DNL would have stayed in limbo for the next 3 years unless it was carried out the sector study in order for them to know which business to close and which ones to proceed with. They need an indication from the army to say these are the ones we'll stop locally and why. I just wanted to add the point, but I think we can still do that in future.
What does other mean on the goods and services in Program 6?
Okay, thank you, Jay. It incorporates attendance fees at workshops and conferences local and abroad, bursaries, training and development, venues and facilities, in-house catering, and when we have our meetings...
Okay, fine, that's all we're going to do.
Can I just add that yesterday you requested a breakdown, that analysis that was done on the expenditure, the percentages, which was very unclear. What we've done is we've done it slightly differently, and I don't have it on the slides, but I have a hard copy to show you. And we didn't do it per program. We did it over the seven-year period. And I'll hand it to you now, and under economic classifications. And I think this can actually help quite a lot with the explanation that you were looking for yesterday. Okay, and then anything else that I still have outstanding, we will forward to you at the summer school next week.
Thank you. Is this something that Eric and Desmond was also looking at? And feed into the report if it's appropriate. Okay. So, you got copies? They are getting distributed here. Okay. So what you, 1 minute explained to us, what you've done here is this analysis of budget. See, this is much simpler, isn't it? Yeah, this is more comprehensible, I see. Percentage spent in future allocations per acre. Yeah, this is much more user-friendly. Okay, thank you very much. Eh? All right. Yes, Eric.
She was going through the list on the other, but I'm not sure what would be the last item there. Whether I just check it for members.
Yes. There's a subject why people take it, and it's not to do with the National Democratic Revolution, or in the case of the DA, the advancing of a liberal democracy. It's really, you see, he's obsessed with SAA because they've cut off his flight from Cape Town to Port Elizabeth, and so are the other two comrades there from the Eastern Cape. Eric.
Actually, I was
deployed to that area by the Eric is worried about the fact that every time the Cape Town jazz, where's James? Can you relieve me of the pressure? Stress levels go up. On the eve of the jazz festival, everybody rings me to say, comrade, where's my ticket? So can't we pass a resolution? You know, money doesn't like jazz. It's okay. Right?
No.
Okay, you're comfortable. Like it. So, please, then, can we write in a report to Eric Boscati that the acting DG in this committee, James Tavetti, I hope you'll be here next year this time, but in any case, has agreed that they will ensure that all SOEs that have some stake in the jazz festival will give every member a ticket, free ticket, and in return the members will give the relevant SOE a very easy time when they come and present their report. The second answer to that is Marty van Dijk.
All the answers,
okay, they want other means. Okay, other, I must add, Eric, to be upfront, and this is transparent, does include the tickets for the staff of DPE and the SOEs, excluding the public representatives. She was going to say that, and I just thought she might be too transparent. All right,
Having said that, may I take this opportunity? The concluding slide is, James, unless you want to say a word, basically they, we can read that and it gives a summary. Is there anything particularly you want to say for a minute or two? No, no, no. At the end, you see your slide, say, conclusion. I thought maybe you wanted to say a word or two of the DG, which is not here. But in 2 minutes, if you want to say something.
Chair, ordinarily I wouldn't have anything, but the DG has requested that I say something.
Okay. The way you say it is
on
that you are being forced. Yeah, okay.
Chair, just in the 2 minutes you referred to, I think we would like to thank the committee for these 2 days session. I think for us it's helpful that we have this critical input on our work and our programs, and I think I hope that the input from the DG and the minister also assisted the portfolio committee members in relation to what exactly are we all about as a department, but also our collective responsibility as the MPs and also as the official department on the oversight role that we all have to play on our SOEs. Clearly, we did get critical input around, especially yesterday when issues that were coming out of the media were raised with us directly, and we welcome that because I think the minister also emphasized that we, because we work together, we should have this direct access to each other and not just rely on the media. If there are issues that we are picking up elsewhere, we should be able to face each other and say, this is not right, but also get the correct version from the other side. Having said that, Chair, I think we also like to thank the members of the department for really responding to this call of duty and make sure that they present what they needed to present to the portfolio committee. And we hope that they will meet next week in the autumn school.
Okay, just to say from our side, we're very inspired by your work, but we would be more inspired if you had said to us, next year, for the 2 days, we go to Mauritius and we sit there on the beachfront in some nice hotel. Now, Mani can't come because his party feels fiscal discipline is important, so he, needless to say, won't be included. But the rest of us, we are keen on Mauritius next year. Having said that, please note that in the report, Eric Boscasi, that the acting DG, the absence of the DG, said yes to our request. So when we start next year, we should first look at where are we meeting, first point. And if it's here, that means we haven't delivered Mauritius, right? But on a more serious note, thank you very much to all of you, and convey to the DG also our appreciation of the sentiment you have expressed on her and your behalf as a team. We also want to thank all of you for coming. We know it could be difficult and tiresome for you, being put under the spotlight, as it were. But we want to stress that we're just doing our job. That is our role. We welcome the spirit in which you respond. To say also that we need some in-house details sorted out. As I understand, Geneva, you'll be arranging for people to be picked up at 4 o'clock at their respective bases. So it's either here in Parliament or the villages. Oh, nobody's being picked up in Parliament. But you see, Bonani, where do you live? Yeah, well, can we sort this out that Nonzwakazi ain't coming? The Nonzwakazi ain't coming, and Desmore is not coming, right? Eric, you have to be picked up as well. Are you living anywhere near Parliamentary Village, or you? Sorry? No. Well, look, can we sort it out, Geneva, with the two of them? The rest of us are sorted out. I will drive myself, okay, but later. Okay, that's one point. Point two, is there anybody here who's not coming from the MPs and committee side? Apart from Jez Maureen and Nonzwakazi, is anybody not coming? Then three, Mani has explained he has got commitments, his party is having wished them well anyway, for your conference this weekend. He's got up there and he's got some other federal DA responsibility. Yeah. He withdrawn. Oh. Yeah. Okay, he withdrawn. Okay. So basically, apart from that, we meet again in committee on the 16. Is that right? Now, the 17th is the budget vote debate, so I want to alert you, James. The tradition has been that we do the report, and then we get it adopted a few days before the budget vote money, and then we get it published in the ATC on the day that the debate takes place, always. Unfortunately, given that we're going to be in Stellenbosch next week, and given other constraints, we won't be listening to the report. The gap between the completion now and the actual debate is too short, given, forget next week, so it's going to be tomorrow, the working day. It's the 17th. And then it's about 3 or 4 days to do a 20-25 page report and thoroughly go through your documents, which we do after. Now we look at them carefully. It just ain't possible. So I don't think we'll deliver by the 17th, but we will go ahead with the debate. And then, remember, I really think we should discuss this, right? The gap between the time you come before the committee and the actual debate should be at least 3 weeks, really. It's very hard, given our other responsibilities, to release the report. There's no requirement in Parliament that the report must be published in the ATC. In fact, many committees don't even do the report. But we like to do it. That's been our tradition from 1644 or something, and we don't want to change it. Okay, having said that, thanks to everybody. And to the members of the committee, may I add, mostly it's because I owe it to the committee members without patronizing the committee members. I really think that today the committee came to its potential. And it re-emphasizes the point that yesterday we were squabbling unduly, and I accept my responsibility for it. But the truth is, without a study group meeting, you know, we're not coherent. We have to organize, and you can see the synergy today. I really want to thank the members. I know two or three members were really stressed for time. One of them had a family engagement, so they do less now. But I also want to thank the members for being here, and to Mani to apologize about the problem, but it ain't going to happen again. You got his email? You got his grandfather's phone number and everything? You send it to everybody. Send it to his entire extended family, the Fundike clan, the Fundike tribe. Send it to all the Fundikes. This man is in Parliament on these days. Okay. Having said all that, see everybody on Sunday and Monday. Thank you very much for that. We're going to drop that. I'd like to take this to a week. Yeah, okay, Sandra. I'll support that up. Why don't I
got it late, namely.